This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Okay, well, next week, I have a very special guest, and you should go to my website to check my schedule, my upcoming schedule. It's radio-joyonpaper, www.radio-joyonpaper, and I have a schedule there of upcoming interviews. And next Tuesday, I will have Carol J. Perry here in the studio with me to talk about her newest book in her Witch City Mystery series. It's always exciting to have Carol in the studio, and I don't know, every time she's shown up before, we have had a bad storm. So I don't know. It has something to do with the Witch City. I don't know. We will see. If Tuesday it is storming, we will know what is going on with Carol J. Perry. Her new book is coming out next week. It's called Bells, Spells, and Murders. It's her Christmas edition, a special Christmas edition, so the murder won't be too gruesome. And I'm sure it's going to be a great read. You can pre-order it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and have it in your hands right after it's released, because it's going to be a fun book. And I was so happy that she was able to get this off and done in time so that it will be here for Christmas for everyone. And speaking of Christmas, I want to thank National Geographic Kids. National Geographic Kids books are amazing. And at the bottom of the hour, I will be talking to Tanya Steele, who has written a new book for National Geographic. It's called Food Fight, a mouth-watering history of who ate what and why through the ages. It is another wonderful National Geographic book. Nat Geo books for kids are really not for kids. I have to tell you that, because once you get your hands on them, you don't want to give them up to any kids. So that's why I suggest, if you have kids in your life, you should really buy them this book and then buy an extra copy, so if they don't live with you, because you won't want them to leave the house with this book. It is so good. And all of Nat Geo books are wonderful. I am a multitasker. I cannot just sit and watch television. I will be sorting papers or writing lists or going through picture books. And the illustrations in Nat Geo books are so beautiful. Just the illustrations alone, you find yourself stopping and looking at them and learning. You learn so much just from the illustrations. But there's always delightful stories and delightful explanations that just keep your mind occupied and full of all sorts of wonderful thoughts. And in the new book, Tanya Steele has also included, now she is, of course, she's editor for Epicurious, and she's done just about everything in the food industry, including coming out with, we'll let her tell you some of the exciting things that she's come out with. But the important thing is that she knows food, she loves food, and that comes across in this new book. So I'm really excited to be talking to her soon. And if you are going someplace for Thanksgiving, somebody's invited you to their home, buy them this book. They will love it. It is a kind of book that if you have it after you eat the turkey, everybody will sit around and they'll want to read this book and share the stories in it. And it's a book that will really last a lifetime. You will keep this book next to your favorite TV watching chair, because it's the kind of book you'll pick up. You're watching a movie about Mongols, and there's a section in here about what the Mongolians ate. And it's just also fascinating, and you will just love this book. So we will talk to Tanya in a little while. Meanwhile, I'm going to play in a few minutes, I'm going to play an interview that I had with Gail Honeyman. Now, Gail Honeyman was on the program before when the hardback version of her book came out. And at the time, when I first got the book, I said to myself, oh my goodness, I knew what this book was going to be. It's called Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine. First of all, great title. Then I started reading it, and I was about three pages in, and I said, oh my goodness, oh my goodness. This girl not only has a best-selling book on her hands, she also has a film that will be made out of this book, because I immediately, you know, having written screenplays based on people's books, I read this book, the three pages, and I said, oh, this character is just perfect. Any actress would just love to play this part. And so as I'm reading the book, in my mind, I'm actually writing the screenplay. I can see it. I can see it. I can see it. And so when I talked to her, I said to her, I think the first thing I said to her is, it's not just a book. It's going to be a movie. And of course, she was still, you know, waking up from the fact that she had a bestseller going. And now it's about a year and a half later. The paperback version just came out last Friday. So you can get that wherever books are sold. And when you read it, you will understand why I said that any actress would just love this part, because it's a type of part where an actress can just get her teeth into it and run with it and get an Academy Award nomination, because it just has a lot of depth. It's very clever. And Gail Honeyman is absolutely delightful. So I was really happy that I got to talk to her. Again, a very short time, because this is what happens when it's rare that I talk to people for a very short time. I mean, when people come on, I usually manage to keep them on for a long time. But in this case, Gail is on a whirlwind tour to promote this book, because it is Reese Witherspoon who has picked up this book for her new production company. Now, of course, Reese is, I hate to say this, too old, I think, for the part, she's, I understand, wants to have a bit part in the film. But the important thing is that the film will be probably made, because if Reese Witherspoon wants a film made, it gets made. So I think that it's just so exciting. And I was so happy that I got to talk to Gail, even for a little while. So I'm going to run that interview now, and then I'm going to come back and talk a little bit more about BoucherCon, which was the World Mystery Writer Conference that was here in St. Petersburg a week ago. But I'll run that interview now with Gail. I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Gail Honeyman. Wow, Gail, how are you?
Hi, Patsy. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Oh, my goodness. This is so exciting. You know, it was so funny. I spent the weekend at a book event here called BoucherCon for mystery writers. And, you know, half the time, everyone was asking me who's going to be my next guest. And when I said, Gail Honeyman, you got more attention than the people there. As a matter of fact, I was having drinks with Ian Rankin. Now, that's pretty good, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. And who were we talking about? Gail Honeyman. I mean, really, you are like the star of the hour and the year. You must be so excited.
I am. It still all doesn't feel quite real, actually. It's, it's amazing. It's been amazing.
I mean, you have so many admirers, of course, being selected by Reese Witherspoon to do a movie of your book, which I predicted, because the minute I read your book, you know, I mentioned to you before that I was a screenwriter. So when I read books, I always read it with the idea, would it make a good movie?
So you're approaching it from that point of view. Yeah.
I always visualize it. And that's when I know I really love a book. When I start reading it, and like I'm on the third page, and I'm already like ready, my fingers are twitching, and I want to write the screenplay. I get so excited. And of course, that happened here. I mean, it is, you are so amazing. And that Reese would pick you up, I just, you know, for Eleanor Oliphant is completely fine, and you are completely fine, and it is just the book was so tremendous, and it was such a great read. And as I said, I knew immediately. Every once in a while, I get a book where I say, okay, in a few years, I'm going to see this on the big screen. And I knew that about your book.
Huh.
Now, are you, like, still, it's a heady experience for you that you're in the, really the big time where everybody knows about you now?
Goodness, I'm still trying to make sense of it all, really, because I never expected it in a million years. You know, when I started writing, it was really just to see whether or not I could write a novel. I'd always wanted to, but I wasn't sure whether I was able to manage a story over 80,000 words or 90,000 words, you know, to grapple with a narrative over that.
And there you are.
Scale of storytelling. So, it's just been amazing.
Well, you know, I mentioned to you that I lived in England for many years. I bought a cottage in Sonning, one of those 400-year-old buildings, which I later discovered had dry rot and wet rot and also, but it also had underneath a 40-foot drop to a hole in the ground where it was, you know, where Sonning is on the Thames, and it was one of those priest holes. So it was lucky.
Oh. You know?
But I did spend a lot of time in Scotland because I love Scotland. And it was funny, at this book convention, we had quite a few writers from Scotland. It looks like you, all of you.
Really?
Yeah, it was really fun. And but we used to go to Scotland a lot. Of course, I was married, so I never really got to investigate what was under those kilts of those guys. But I wouldn't mind. I can tell you some of the, we had some Scottish writers here who were so handsome. Of course, you know, so I was sorry that they didn't wear kilts. But you, of course, are from such a little town, such a little place, and I do believe that I drove through it. I got lost in Scotland a lot. and it doesn't help that let's say all the sheep farmers you stop, they keep sending you in a different direction.
I'm sure you didn't do it on purpose.
So what's it like? What's Reese Witherspoon like? Everybody wants to know, what's she like?
Well, I haven't actually met her in person, but I'm so excited to see what she does, what she's going to do with the book. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's not nice. She has to fly you out there and wine you and dine you. She's got
it's
your...
It's such early stages in the whole process. It's early days, but it's so exciting. It's so exciting.
It is. Well, I'm sure, you know, having worked in Hollywood, I know what they're going to do. When they get you there, they will wine you and dine you, and it will be wonderful. It'll be so much fun. And I hope that they'll let you on the set. Sometimes, you know, when they're doing a movie, sometimes they don't want the author there because they say, you know, it's hard for the author. You write so many words, and they can't use all those words.
Of course. It's a different skill set completely, that screenwriter to author, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it is. It is. It's funny. It's when we're dealing with authors, and you know, you get a book with... And now, with you, it's very difficult because all of your words are so good.
Thank you very much, Patsy. That's very kind of you.
Well, you have just a lovely flow, and I think perhaps it comes partly from being from Scotland, and there's just a sort of a lilt, a little different than other, you know, writing. And I think that's why the book, well, I don't know, I don't know anyone who hasn't read it, and anyone who doesn't know about Eleanor, because, you know, she's just such a perfect character.
Thank you very much. She was a lot of fun to write. She's she has a very unique take on the world and a very unique vocabulary and approach to life, really. So it was a lot of fun to try and get that right and to create that character. I enjoyed writing her very much.
Well, I think that shows through in the book, and that, you know, when I was young, I had a few of those weekends with a bottle of I'm more of a bourbon person. Of course, she's vodka, but it is funny. I didn't know why you didn't do Scottish whiskey, but you know, you have to give something to the Russians, do you?
Yeah, Well, Eleanor's never predictable, hopefully. Hopefully she doesn't. She always makes unpredictable choices, let's say.
Well, I know I don't get a lot of time with you because you're on like a wild tour here for the release of the paperback. I was so happy when the hardback came out, and I'm always happy because I get books so far in advance. So I had already read the book when it came out, and I knew that it was going to be a movie. And I was so happy when I heard that Reese Witherspoon picked it up because I know it will be a tremendous movie. And I hear she even she wants a part in it. Do you know which part she's going to have?
It's such early days in the whole process, and I'm not sure about the details of anything yet.
But, well, maybe they'll let you
have to watch this space, I guess.
Well, I think they should let you have a little part in it too. You can go and.
Oh, I'm happy to.
I think
I'm happy to write rather than act. I'm a terrible. I've got no acting ability.
I know, but they can put you somewhere so you can sit there and look beautiful and be in the movie too.
I think I'll just enjoy watching it with popcorn in the theater.
Well, I know we will too. And again, I want everyone to go out and get this. It's released tomorrow in the paperback version. It's a wonderful book. It's so unexpected. You know, you don't expect this story to be so funny and so witty. Well, witty and clever. But of course, you're from Scotland, so we should expect it, right?
That's okay. Very kind of you to say so. Thank you very much, Patsy.
Okay, well, I know you have lots of fans, and I have to say bye-bye now. But I hope when the movie comes out, you'll come back on and we'll talk about it, okay?
Sounds great.
Okay, bye-bye now. Well, that was a fun interview. Whenever I talk to Scottish people, I start I get an accent. I don't know. Now, as I mentioned, we had BoucherCon here, which is the big mystery writer convention. And we were very lucky that it was here in my area. And the best thing, I mean, I got to meet so many of the authors, of course, who have been on the program and got to see some of them who I hadn't seen before and many who I had seen before. And I got some wonderful photos. And one of them, and I will post it on Facebook, it's so funny, with Lee Child. He is so tall, and I look so tiny compared to him. So he is, of course, as everyone knows, he wrote the Jack Reacher books, and he, in writing the books, Jack Reacher, of course, is described as 6'5", blue eyes, blonde, and good looking, and which is exactly what Lee Child looks like. And then Tom Cruise bought the books, some of them, to make films, and of course Tom Cruise is just the opposite. But as Lee has now explained to me, he has taken back the books, and he is going to be, I'm sure he's the executive producer, and they are going to be on one of the streaming channels. I'm not sure which one yet, but I'm sure it's going to be a tremendous hit, just like the recent release of Jack Ryan on Amazon Prime has become a tremendous hit. And I know that once Lee Child finds the right actor to portray the Jack Reacher of his, that's his vision, it's going to be fun. But it was great to take a picture with him. And you really do, I was tempted to ask him how's the weather up there because he's so tall. But I met so many wonderful authors, but I must say, I fell in love with Ian Rankin because he's so charming. He is absolutely amazing, and I was so thrilled. I was standing with him in the bar, and he's like, "Whoa!" I didn't know if I should say, if I should address him. You know, he's now a sir, but it was funny, and he was absolutely delightful. And if you haven't read his books, you must. I hope that I can get him on. I don't know if he was headed back to Scotland, his series, the John Rebus mystery series, is fantastic, and I hope that you will read that. Now, I'm going to also, right now, while I'm waiting for Tanya Steele to come and talk about the new Nat Geo book, which is called Food Fight, a mouth-watering history of who ate what and why through the ages. I want to play one more book buzz from our very, very special correspondent, Rita Moreau, or Radio Rita, as we call her. And because she was at BouchaCon with me, and we got to meet and talk to Karen Slaughter. And so Rita did a special book buzz for her. And here it is. And then we'll have a commercial, and we'll be back. Okay.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery. Hey, what if the person you thought you knew best turns out to be someone you never knew at all? And what if that person was your mother? Yikes! In Pieces of Her, Book 18 by Karen Slaughter, those questions are explored. Here's the buzz. Andrea knows everything about her mother, Laura, because we all know our mothers, don't we? So after her mother, a seemingly mild-mannered woman, stops a killer during a mall shooting, Andrea discovers that her mother has a secret identity. Because it turns out that before Laura was Laura, she was someone completely different. For nearly 30 years, she's been hiding from her previous identity, lying low in the hope that no one would ever find her. But now she's been exposed, and nothing will ever be the same again. Wowzer! Karen Slaughter is an American crime writer whose first novel, Blindsided, became an international success, was published in almost 30 languages, and made the Crime Writers Association's Dagger Award shortlist for Best Thriller Debut of 2001. One well-known author put it this way: enter the world of Karen Slaughter. Just be forewarned, there's no going back. I'll say no more and let you decide by reading Pieces of Her by Karen Slaughter, one of the world's most popular and acclaimed storytellers. Hey, this is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more on my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's Radio-Joy on Paper. Rita Moreau buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660, or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back, and I'm just waiting for Tanya Steele to call in to talk about her new book. And meanwhile, I want to talk a little bit more about Gail Honeyman. You know, This is an example of what I have been telling all of you, to find the joy on paper. Gail Honeyman was, she had a boring job. She was a civil servant. Her life, you know, she was like, what am I going to do with my life? She had gone to university and she landed up at becoming a civil servant. And then she decided to start writing slowly. She wrote short stories. I have told all of you that if you are thinking about becoming a writer, that is a very, very good way to do it. I discovered an author because of her short stories. Nikki Drayden is a fine author who landed up getting a wonderful book deal with Donald Moss, which is really, he is the one of the top literary agents in New York City. But Nikki started by writing short stories. She wrote, well, she wrote a couple dozen of them, but she published them four at a time in little, just little books on Amazon. What that did for her was it gave her practice. She practiced, and every time she was getting better and better. And just by having that goal that I'm going to write a book with four short stories, publish it, and start becoming an author, become a published author. Now, she published those ones by herself, but they were good. And I know I discovered her through her short stories, and I was so happy that she was discovered by Donald Moss, and she got a book deal for her first book, which is called The Prey of Gods. And then, of course, once you get a book deal, the first book deal, the second book deal comes, well, not much easier, but easier, definitely. And so it was so wonderful that she has now gotten to a point where her books are going to be selling nicely, and she's going to have a good following. And the new book is called Temper. And I was reading that book, and again, as happened with reading Gail Honeyman's book, wow, I recognize that this is also one of those books. It's very visual. Particularly Temper, her Nikki Drayden's second book. I mean, I could see this as a film in my head, and I was so excited when I was reading it. So it's wonderful when you are writing that you are able to really take the reader into your story and make them visualize it. Now, I was, when I read the book by Gail Honeyman, Eleanor Oliphant is completely fine. I realized, of course, that it would make a great film. One, because she drew me into the story, and Eleanor is a character who just, and the subject is the funny thing is the subject is about Eleanor, who is lonely and who has these weekends where she's drinking vodka because she doesn't know how to get out there and become part of the world. And so the whole book explores the subject of loneliness, but it, because I must say that Gail is very witty and a delightful writer. She makes it fun. She makes the story interesting. And I know that it's going to be, for some actress, it will be an Academy Award nomination type of thing. But there are so many books out there that when you're reading and you realize, wow, this is something special. Another book that I read recently that I felt the same way about is Jill Block's The Truth About Parallel Lines. Again, this book is set in New York City. And as I'm reading it, I feel like I am in New York City. And it was so exciting for me to find a book like that takes me into the city, makes me feel like I'm right there. So it's important for all of you authors out there, read. You have to read well. You have to read a wide range of things because you don't know exactly what will click in your mind and you'll say, okay, that's going to be something that I want to incorporate in my writing. I want to be able to describe a place so well. If you're reading a book and somebody describes it, and actually they might do it in just a few lines, but boy, you are there, then This is something that you have to do as somebody who wants to write and get better. But again, it only happens if you actually put the words down on paper. I was so excited at BoucherCon to meet so many authors who had thought that they couldn't write until they actually did. Some because they were bored, perhaps like Gail Honeyman in a boring job. Some people like Lee Child started writing because he was fired from a great job, a job that he thought he was going to stay in for the rest of his life. And then he was fired at the age of 39 and he said, okay, I have to do something. Well, actually, his wife probably said, okay, you have to do something. I don't think she had in mind at the time that he would take a year to write a book. But this is what happens, and it's so exciting when I was talking to the different authors that there came a time when the character, and in Gail Honeyman's case, she started writing, and she sold her book based on 3 chapters. Now, this is also a remarkable thing. This happens very rarely, where you only have 3 chapters. She had 3 chapters written, and she submitted them to a contest where they asked for 3 chapters. She didn't have anything else. So, I mean, you don't normally do that. You're supposed to have the whole book ready. But she had just finished 3 chapters. She saw a notice for a contest where they wanted you to submit the first 3 chapters. And she did it. Now, she didn't win, which is good because she didn't actually have the rest of the book. But what's funny about it is that one of the people, and this is why I tell you, if you're going to submit your work to great contests. Like the San Francisco Writers Conference is coming up in January. I think they are now taking submissions. You have to, if you're going to submit your work, submit it to contests like, and any of the very big ones, like Writer's Digest, San Francisco Writers Conference, because the people who are reading these submissions are not just anyone. They're not just people they picked up off the street. These are actual agents or people, editors in some of the big publishing houses. So they know writing. And that's the only time that, you know, you're going to get a really, somebody who's reading your work who really knows what's good and what's not good. And even then, they sometimes make mistakes. But in this case, in Gail Honeyman's case, she had 3 chapters. She put it in to win. It would have been funny if she'd have won, and then she'd have had to tell them, actually, I don't have the rest of the book. But luckily for her, she didn't win, but an agent read it and liked the 3 chapters and contacted her. And from there, that was enough encouragement. Boy, oh boy, I'm sure it didn't take her too much longer to get the entire book done, because once a literary agent says, I'd like to buy that book, you tend to get really busy really fast. And that's also what happens, why when you write one book and then you are working on, you know, trying to find an agent, you should already be working on the second book. And that's what Nikki Drayden did. She had a deal for her first book, The Prey of Gods. And luckily, she had already been starting to work on her next book, because once you get a book deal, then they want a book every year. And this is in this current business, that's what they want. They want a book every year now. And of course, for the big authors, some of them are actually turning out 2 books a year, sometimes in different series, so that the publishers can be happy and their agents can be happy. But this is something that you have to look into and think about, that go, you know, enter your work into contests. You never know who's going to be reading it and who will be touched by your work. So it's so exciting, and I was so thrilled. It's thrilling for me when I get a book that I know is going to make it, because sometimes I get books and I like them, but I know that they're not going to probably have a long shelf life, or they're not going to last a long time. And in some cases, I get a book like this Eleanor Oliphant, and I said, this is the kind of book it has legs. It's going to stay out there for a long time because people are going to be turning to it. And so now, of course, and it's nice to know that Reese Witherspoon has the same taste as I do. And I'm sure that it's going to be fun to see this on film. And I hope that when it happens, Gail will come back and be a guest on. Now, meanwhile, I'm still waiting. I don't know what is happening with Tanya Steele, but we are living in hope that she will be on. I think she's just called in, and we're going to have her in a minute. So the wonderful thing about Nat Geo books, I would always buy two, because when you buy a Nat Geo kids book, you want to keep one for the child in you, and then you want to make sure that you give at least one away to some kid. And it's really the perfect time. Go to my website, radio-joyonpaper.com, and I have at the bottom of my front page there a list of Nat Geo books that I have had interviews with the authors, and you will find there certainly a book that you will enjoy. And I am so happy to welcome now to Joy on Paper Tanya Steele. Hi, Tanya.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. And so much happier since I've been reading this book. This book, it's called Food Fight, A Mouth-Watering History of Who Ate What and Why Through the Ages. And you have done a brilliant job with it. It is absolutely amazing.
You're so sweet. Thank you so much. It was a three-year research project, so it was fantastic to work on.
Well, you have done just a marvelous job. And why don't, you know, you are... Wow, you are so important in the whole food world. And you know, the most amazing thing is that, well, I don't know, there's so many amazing things about you, but you started a state dinner at the White House for children.
Yep.
Wow, that exciting?
Right, that's right. For five, it was amazing, and we did it for 5 years, and then we did something inspired by that with the Canadian government called Kid Food Nation, and it's still going on. It's a national recipe competition for kids that I do with Boys and Girls Clubs of Canada and Chorus Entertainment, and we're actually having our Winners Gala at the end of October in Ottawa. So I encourage all families out there to do it next year, to enter their best healthy recipe.
Well, you know, I love Nat Geo books. Nat Geo kids books are the most amazing, and I tend to drop that kids, because really these books are not just for kids. Any adult would love this book.
That's what I really tried to write it for any age, although I did put some things that were silly or gross to keep kids interested, as well as kind of fun interactive quizzes at the end of every chapter to see if kids remembered all of the facts that we had just put in the chapter before.
Well, that again, that's one of the clever things. Nat Geo has such beautiful illustrations, and your stories behind the food are so beautifully written. And I know that this is a perfect way for kids to learn history.
Thank you so much. I really hope so. I really want to galvanize kids to learn about world history and all the people and kids that have come before them, and to also learn about healthy foods and cooking and how fun it is and what a great lifelong skill and passion it should be.
And the recipes are fantastic. And it's so funny. There's one particular recipe in there, and I had forgotten about this. It's called chocolate bread custard. And one of my aunts must have made it when I was a kid, and I hadn't thought about that for years. And then I saw the recipe. I thought, my goodness, why haven't I been making this? Because it's so easy, and it's so good.
It really is, and that's a great World War II recipe. That's literally from an evaporated milk a recipe from the early 40s when people were rationing dairy. And all of the recipes in the book, there are 30 of them, are inspired by the eras and are adapted for modern times and flavors. And I had kids test them and make sure that they love them and could follow the recipes really easily. So they're kid tested and kid approved.
Well, they are wonderful. The recipes are fantastic. And there's just so much. I don't know where to start. But one of the things is I did not know that there was ice cream so early. I thought it was more of a 19th century thing.
That's right. Actually, ice cream, we're not sure when it was exactly invented, but we do know that it first appeared in terms of being recorded in King, I think it was King Edward in the 1500s. His cook came up with a recipe for ice cream, and he was so excited by it that he actually paid that cook to keep the recipe a secret so no other courts in Europe could have it.
Wow. Each of the stories, I love, for example, you have the story there about Mongolia and Mongolians, because most kids, the problem nowadays in schools, they're not teaching geography enough. I believe that if we want world peace, it would help if the kids knew the world, where in the world all these countries are.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And one of the ways to kind of get them into history and learning about geography is through food. I mean, it's such a universal language. So I'm hoping that Food Fight is a good book as an entree into how exciting and interesting the world is outside.
Well, I think so. And I think like the Mongolian one for children who are not aware of where Mongolia is, the minute they start reading about this section and understand a little bit about the Silk Road and the importance of the Silk Road to our culinary world.
Yes, it's amazing how much they actually gave to the world with the Silk Road. They kind of controlled the Silk Road for quite a while, and the Silk Road was really very much kind of an informational highway that spread cultures and cuisines throughout the world.
And, just when people today, they always like to think that they are the ones who have come out with new things and nobody else ever thought of it. And so everybody's drinking almond milk today. And most people don't realize that almond milk's been around for a long time.
Exactly. I mean, it's really been around for thousands of years. So people used to make milk out of anything that they possibly could, goats being very popular. And even the Mongols actually drank a lot of mare milk. But almond milk has been around for a long time, which is why we put a recipe. It's surprisingly easy to make and very delicious.
Yes, I didn't know how easy it was until I got this book. I thought, whoa, I didn't know that. I thought I knew everything. I had no idea. It's really quite amazing.
Oh, thanks. Well, hopefully people will discover new foods and interesting little factoids that they can, tell their friends and family and keep everyone entertained and educated.
Well, you are, where did this passion for food come from?
You know, my mom was actually a terrible cook when I was growing up, and so I learned how to cook at an early age, and that's kind of what started me on this path of getting kids to learn how to cook and eat healthfully for themselves so they can kind of control what they eat and how much they eat. And also cooking is such a great way to express love and happiness and joy. It's a great way to share memories. It's a great way to pass down heritage and embrace seasonality and local ingredients. So it's kind of a all-around great thing to know how to do.
And you have been, had so many important positions with Epicurious and of course you know all the great chefs, I think, right?
I do, yes. It's been a fantastic career, and I'm just blessed to have had it.
And I'm sure it's wonderful when all the chefs know you are coming. If you're in town, I'm sure they invite you to a great meal.
Well, there's so many great chefs in Canada, too. I mean, it's so much great ingredients, and, it's such a beautiful, beautiful country with beautiful people. So I encourage everyone to, kind of get out there and forage and fish and, go to the farmer's market and, really celebrate.
I have spent so many happy, happy weeks at Blue Lake in Quebec. And that's where you get the best trout in the world. You just pull it out in the morning and you have breakfast and it's wonderful.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah. You're very blessed to live in such a beautiful land.
So tell me, when you were researching this book, and were there any things that really surprised you that you discovered?
Almost everything I learned surprised me. Crazy things like, in ancient Rome, a general actually had two people over for dinner and spent the equivalent of $3 million on the dinner alone. And how The medieval kings lived this incredible, extravagant lifestyle and had roasted peacock for dinner, and they would literally put a cloth in their mouth and light it and parade it around as if it was a fire-eating dragon, and that's what they would all have. And then the townspeople who were hungry and starving and had eaten moldy bread for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, they actually came and watched them eat this kind of stuff. So every chapter has kind of crazy factoids like that and just really fascinating things that, you know, who knew all of these things? I mean, it's just amazingly fascinating.
Now, you've never eaten peacock, have you?
Roasted peacock? No, I have not. No.
Well, they ate some yucky things back then. I'm sure the kids will love to hear about some of the yucky things they ate. Why did they like this yucky stuff?
You know, when you didn't have a supermarket or, you know, any kind of market to go to, you had to forage and you had to hunt, and that's how you found things. And so, you know, you were hungry and you ate what you could. If it was edible, you ate it. And a lot of what we eat was discovered by trial and error. You know, if someone saw one of their pack eating a mushroom and that person then got ill or died, then they knew, okay, fun fact, never eat that mushroom again. So that's kind of the way that things evolved, through trial and error.
Well, it was fascinating, too. I think perhaps children might appreciate sugar more instead of spilling it all over the table when they realize how expensive it used to be.
That's so true. And that's true with salt and cinnamon and nutmeg and all the spices. In fact, some sailors who would import cinnamon and nutmeg actually made so much money they could come home and build a house. You know, spices were used as medicines. They were used as incense. They were used to preserve foods and also as flavoring agents. So, you know, when you take out that little salt or cinnamon, be thankful and know that you're actually holding something that was considered precious.
And even for Christopher Columbus, right?
Exactly. He was actually set sail for cinnamon. He didn't set sail for a new land. He was looking for spices. And Isabella wanted her cinnamon.
I think it's wonderful for kids to learn something like that so that they can appreciate. It's a type of thing that they can think about every time they're sitting down and there's, you know, they go into a restaurant and you look at a salt shaker and you can tell the story about how precious that salt is and how actually we are so lucky. Now, also, I didn't realize that when one of the facts in there is about when we first had running water in the United States.
That's right. It wasn't really until the 1800s that we had running water in people's homes. Really quite in the middle of the 1800s. It was a very slow rollout, and I know that's true for Canada even more so. So, you know, we all take it for granted, all of these things, but in fact, they're pretty recent.
Well, that's why I think this book is absolutely delightful, as all Nat Geo kids books are, and I'm telling everyone right now that this is a perfect gift. If you are invited to someone's home for Thanksgiving, bring this book as a thank you gift, because it's a kind of thing that everybody there, after you eat the turkey and before you eat, go for the pumpkin pie, everybody will just enjoy passing this book around and reading it and sharing the stories. And it's not just for kids.
That's right, exactly. It's not just for kids, for sure.
And the recipes are so good. I liked the Allied Soldier Pudding one, and I think that's a great recipe.
Oh, thanks so much, Patsy. I appreciate it. Yeah, hopefully people will really enjoy the recipes as much as the rest of the book.
And as you said, you've written them for children so that children can follow with the help of a parent to turn on the stove, to do the recipes themselves. But every adult, and I'm telling you right now, tonight, my family is having the chocolate bread custard because it's just, I just love that. And I was thinking to myself, why did I forget to make that over these years? Now I'll make up for it, probably. I don't think I'm going to make the astronaut fruit cake, though. But you never know.
Well, let me know how it comes and what people think. I'd be curious to hear.
I will. Well, I'm so glad you came out with this book. Tanya Steele, you are an absolute, I mean, it's brilliant. I just love it. I think you've done a delightful job and a great service for children. everyone out there, if you have a kid in your life, you have to get this book, and you have to, well, don't, you won't want to share it, so get your own copy. I'm a multitasker. When I'm watching television, I have to do something else, and this is a perfect book to have right next to you and read. So, Tanya, thank you so much for joining me on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Woo! I love this book. I'm not giving this book to anybody. I don't care. This book stays with me because it is just too beautiful. And I will, I have to send my son one because I want him. He's up at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And I hope he's not in doing some brain surgery or something today. But if he's not, he's probably listening to me. And he's working on his PhD. So, and when he's doing when I say he's doing brain surgery, it's on animals. I'm sorry about that, but he's not cutting up anybody if he's listening to me. But I just want to say a special hi to him. He was home for a week, and it was just so wonderful to have him home. And I want him to have this book, but I'm just going to order one for him because I'm not giving this book up. It is just so much fun. And again, you can see it on my website, radio-joyonpaper.com. Go there and then order this book. And it's just, you will love it. And as a matter of fact, when you're there, make sure that you check out some of the interviews that I have going up there. I will be putting up my interview with Karen Slaughter. She is a hoot. This woman is wild. She was so much fun at BoucherCon. I think she was the funniest of all the panelists. And so everybody enjoyed listening to her tell the story about her childhood. So she's a hoot, and I think the interview I had with her was lots of fun. So I ran that last week, but I think I'm going to rerun that sometime in October because everybody wants to hear it. It's just absolutely a fun interview. And again, next Tuesday, I will have Carol J. Perry here, and also next Thursday, I will have Bill Larson from Larson & Larson. So if you have a legal question, if you are worried about copyright, if you are worried about your trademark, if you have a character or something special in your book that you want to trademark, you should contact Bill Larson at Larson & Larson. He has the answers, and you don't want to run. I did talk to a few authors who had and who have actually running problems with copyright infringement. And it happens out there. People are out there who will steal your work. And sometimes they will steal it whole cloth. In other words, they take the entire book and run it through some kind of program, change the names, and republish it. Yes, that happened. I just was talking to a writer, and that happened to her. So I want you to be careful out there, and also don't fall for any scams. Don't pay anyone who says they're an agent, because agents don't charge you money. So we will be talking to some agents also over the next few weeks, and so that they can tell you that they don't charge money up front because they are real agents, like Donald Moss from, who is the agent for Nikki Drayden, one of my favorite writers. Anyway, remember, find the joy on paper, because one of the greatest things in life is to hear your words spoken in an audible book, or like now, lucky for a Gail Honeyman in a film, and it's coming up. So anyway, bye-bye for now. Say something nice to someone. I say something nice to Big Ed real quickly because he wants to cut me off because it's time. I talk too much. Okay, bye-bye, Ed. Bye-bye, everybody. Ooh. Okay.